This week is Parshas Miketz, which is on page 222 in the Arutz Chumash. I'm going to focus today really on two parts of the Parsha, one being the beginning of the Parsha, and one being the very end of the Parsha. And we'll try to look at it through the lens of the totality of how Yosef views dreams. Just a background, of course, is that last week in Parshas Vayeshev, we were introduced once again to Yosef and the dreams which he encountered. Two dreams were his own dreams, right? The dream of when he and his brothers were in the field dealing with their whatever they were harvesting, and the bundles stand up and they bow down to Yosef's bundle. There's no number given there in terms of how many bundles are in there, unlike in the musical, which some of you are probably familiar with. My daughter is in the musical. They're actually performing it in high school this year. Anybody wants to go January 9th? Okay, anyway, so I told her at the very beginning, because she hadn't been familiar with it, that there's only one line of the whole musical that is accurate. The very first line, way, way back many centuries ago. That's it. Everything else, it says not long after the Bible began. That's not true. It's like over 2,000 years after the Bible. Anyway, that musical gets everything wrong. So there aren't 11, it just says bundles. So we don't know how many brothers were gleaning in the field with Yosef in his dream. Then it says that there are 11 stars and the sun and the moon which bow down to Yosef, which is not in the musical. Okay, no more comparisons to the musical, but okay. So those are Yosef's dreams. And the truth is that if you look at it, while the brothers get upset at Yosef, and while Yaakov has his own interpretation of it, where he says, "What your mother and I are going to bow down to you? Are you out of your mind?" Which, of course, is insane. His mother can't bow down to him. His mother's dead. So there are different commentaries who view that in terms of what's Yaakov doing. Did Yaakov interpret it wrong? Was he saying that Bilhah, who is Rachel's maid, is going to be in Rachel's place? Was Yaakov interpreting it at all? Was Yaakov saying to Yosef, you know what, I'm going to cover for you because your brothers are really mad at you, and I'm just going to interpret it as shtuyot, as silliness, because it's impossible that your mother would be there, and so therefore if your brothers see that this is an interpretation which is inaccurate, then they'll realize that the whole dream is inaccurate and there won't be anything to worry about. So that's an interesting just perspective in terms of trying to understand what Yaakov's doing. But in the scheme of things, Yosef's dream is never actually interpreted, I think. Okay, I mean, I may be wrong, but that's the way that I view it. In the end of the parsha, Yosef encounters the dreams of the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim. That's the chief butler and baker, and Yosef, in fact, interprets their dreams for them. And I give a parsha class on Wednesday night here, and this year we're using the commentary of the Netziv, and the Netziv made some points, and he's not the only one. I think Ramban does this also, and there are other commentaries as well, who look at the dreams that Yosef hears from the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim, and they look at his interpretation of them. Okay, now I imagine that people are at least minimally familiar with that, with those dreams. So they each have a dream in which something, the number three, appears, and the Sar HaMashkim, that's the wine pourer, butler fella, he gives in his dream a cup of wine to Paro that he has just squeezed out from the grapes. And the baker has three baskets on his head, and birds eat all the baked goods that are in the baskets. So, but there are more details. Now, Yosef looks at these dreams and he interprets them for them, and he says to each of them, "Well, three equals 3 days. You, in your dream, you give wine to Paro, so you're going to get your job back. You, the birds are eating them. The birds are going to eat you." So it seems pretty straightforward. How come they couldn't figure that out? Well, because there are a lot more details in there. And Yosef doesn't really address the details in interpreting these dreams. And the question is why? So the Netziv and some of the other commentaries, they say Yosef didn't tell them what those meant because those were actually messages for himself. And that opens up just a fascinating door to a question of, you know, what Paro's dreams might mean for him, because Yosef, it's fascinating, as we're about to see, two significant insights that I'm going to draw to your attention in looking at these dreams that Paro has, and how it could very well be that Yosef is once again ignoring some details in not interpreting, in other words, in his interpretation. He's ignoring them in terms of what he tells Paro, because they're not so much for Paro as much as they are for Yosef. Okay, now, how do I know that? Because later on in the parsha, we'll see when after Yosef has been elevated to be, you know, the second in command to the king. So Yosef's brothers come down looking for food during the time of famine, and the pasuk, the Torah is going to tell us that Yosef sees his brothers and remembers his dreams. Okay, now was he always thinking about his dreams? Was he trying to push things along? That's a great question. We don't really know if Yosef, because how much of what's going on here is really in Yosef's hands. Think about it. Yosef gets thrown into a pit in last week's parsha. He gets brought down to Egypt. Okay, he's bought as a slave. And then you think things can't get any worse for him, and then he ends up in a jail. And how long he's in jail? The only thing we know is the passage of time, because the Torah told us how old Yosef was at the beginning of last week's parsha, the very beginning. It told us he was 17. And we're going to soon see that when he gets brought before Paro, he's 30. So 13 years. So how much of that time he was a slave versus how much of a time he was in that prison, that's not clear. I mean, we can conjecture. We don't really know. We do know that he was in prison for at least 2 more years after interpreting the dreams, because look at the very beginning of the parsha here, 2:22, Vayhi mikeich nasayim yamim. Right, it's at the end of 2 years, so and it's presumably at the end of 2 years from the last thing which we just read, which was when the Sarah Mashkim gets out of jail and gets his job back. So this is 2 years later. So we have this idea. So in other words, definitely from the time that Yosef, from the time of the beginning of last week's parsha until the end of the parsha, last week is a passage of 11 years. Okay? And the first 2-3 words of this parsha is a passage of 2 years, right? Vayhi mikeich nasayim yamim, first 4 words rather, 2 years. And then by the time that the brothers come down to Egypt, at the end of the parsha, is after 7 years of plenty, right? 2 years of famine. So add that up. That's 2 years plus 7 plus 9 plus 2 is 9. So it's also 11 years. So I just noticed this last week that Parshas Miketz covers an 11-year period. Parshas Vayeshev covers an 11-year period. And Parshas Vayishlach also covers an 11-year period, which is, you know, I don't know what that means, but it's just cool. Anyway, that's just a little bit of the background. So if Yosef in all of that, I mean, and in all that time, does Yosef have even a thought that his dreams, A, mean that he's going to be a ruler one day, and B, that his family is going to bow down to him in all that time that he's a slave and in prison? I mean, does anybody think that Yosef is thinking about these things? Well, what about my dreams? When's that going to happen? You know, you can imagine like a 10-year-old kicking the can down the sidewalk, you know, but I want to be a baseball player one day. I mean, I can't imagine Yosef's thinking, oh, but my dreams have to come true. We don't see any hint of that until his brothers show up. And then the pasuk says, Vayar, you know, Vayizkor as a chalomo, he remembers the dreams. Okay, so that's after all those years. Okay, so let's take a look with all that as a background. To the beginning of the parsha, okay, and how this is how it's presented. And I want you to pay attention to the way Paro dreams in real time, and we're going to look at that in comparison to the way Paro tells over the dream when Yosef is brought to him. We'll have one significant insight in between. Okay, Torah begins. So the first line, I'm going to read in the Hebrew just because I think that we all benefit from that, but I'm going to translate everything as well. Paro is dreaming, and here he's standing on the river. Okay, now it's a dream. Can you stand on the river in a dream? Anything can happen in a dream, right? On the river. So from the river comes up 7 cows who are described as Yefos Mar'eh, very pretty looking, Ubrios, and healthy, Basar, healthy flesh or healthy meat, Vatir Ena Ba'achu, and they are grazing, and the article translates Ba'achu, in the marshland. So are they in the actual river now, when they came up, I don't know exactly how they came up. Was that, was there an elevator? They just right. They came up. But in marshland means that they could probably stand on a ground, but it's a little swampy, right? Presumably. Okay. And another seven cows come up after them from the river. Raosmare, not so pretty looking, with akos basar, and thin of meat. But tamodna, and they stood eitzalaparos al svasayor, next to the cows on the edge of the river. Now that's actually the first time that we see that they're on the edge of the river. Because before they were ba'achu, in that marshland. Okay, so the next thing. Batochana paros for osamareva takosa basar. So these skinny and ugly cows, they ate eisheva paros yifosamareva abrios, the pretty looking cows, the healthy cows. Okay, note how they're no longer called brios basar, they're just called brios, which means healthy. Vayikats paro, and paro woke up. Vayishan, vayachalom shenisin, he went to sleep again, he had another dream, a second dream. And behold, now we don't know where he is. It doesn't really describe where he is. It's just he's dreaming, and there are seven stalks coming out of one larger stalk, healthy and good. Pasuk vav, v'hinei sheva shibalim, and there are another seven, and there are seven stalks. Dakos, right? They're described the same dakos, similar as the way that the skinny cows were described. Ushidufos kadim, right? What is that? Torn apart by the wind? Is that what it is? Kadim usually means an easterly wind. So yeah, scorched by the east wind. Ushidufos kadim. So mochos acharyan, growing after them. Vativlana shibalim adakos yesheva shibalim abrios v'amaleos. So now the first set of stalks are described as being brios v'amaleos, healthy and full, whereas before they were called brios v'tovos, healthy and good. And the seven, not so healthy looking stalks ate those, consumed them. Vayikatz paro v'hinei chalom. This time paro wakes up, and behold, it was a dream. Now it didn't say v'hinei chalom after the first one. It just said vayikatz paro, and then it told us that he fell asleep, and then he had a second dream. So that could be the first hint, by the way, v'hinei chalom, and behold, it was a dream. You'll recall, or maybe don't recall, maybe you haven't, maybe you don't remember. But when Paro, after Paro tells Yosef his dreams, Yosef says to him that Paro's dreams are, in fact, one dream. Okay? So the fact that the Torah tells us that here already indicates. Now there are, I don't remember if it's in the Midrash, I think the first time that I heard this, maybe I heard it, I mean, that I remember, was it somebody, I mean, I remember who told us, that it was Rav Tabori, Zichrono Lebracha, he passed away last year, from Gush Etzion, was telling us, and he quoted Nechama Leibowitz. I remember he said Nechama Leibowitz. So I couldn't find it in Nechama Leibowitz's article, so maybe it was somewhere else. But where she said that Paro, in addition to dreaming his dream, also dreamed the interpretation. When he woke up, all he remembered was the dream. So that when Yosef gave the interpretation, he said, "Ah, right." Because sometimes something triggers that kind of memory. So that's how Paro knew that Yosef's interpretation was correct, as opposed to whoever else may have tried to interpret it. It's a fascinating insight, by the way, in terms of the two dreamers from last week's Parsha. When I saw this also, I don't remember where, but one of the interpretations is that they each had their own dream about themselves, but they dreamed the interpretation of the other guy. So the Sara Ofim, right, that's the baker, he had his dream, meant that he was going to be killed, but he didn't know that. He dreamed the interpretation of the Sara Mashkim, which said, "You're going to get your job back." So he says, "Oh, that's probably what my dream means too." So he wasn't planning to tell Yosef his dream, okay? Because, why should he? His dream is good. So then when the Sara Mashkim, who was really distraught, right, over his dream, tells Yosef, because what's the interpretation of the baker? So he says, "Okay, you really need to help me because I need to understand." So he tells Yosef, and the baker is watching, and he sees Yosef is very precise, and he gets all the details right, and he says, "You're going to get it. You're going to get your job back." And then it says, "Vayar Sarah Ofim Kitov Pasar." He saw that Yosef interpreted well. Yeah, what do you mean? How do you know that he interpreted well? Because he knew what the guy's interpretation was. He says, "You know what? Maybe I missed something." So then he tells Yosef his dream, And Yosef says, okay, sorry, bad news. So that's the idea here, that Paro also had his, so he knew what his dream meant, and that's why it was killing him so much. I don't mean literally, but it was bothering him so much, because he wakes up and says, this was important, but I don't know what it is. But the Torah is giving us a first indicator that it's really one message. So when Yosef later on says, Chalom Paro Echadu, that it's all one dream, Paro's like, this is the guy. He knows. He's getting it right. Okay, so that's what we see. Pasuk Ches then says, Vayhi Baboker, it was in the morning, and Paro's all destroyed. I'm just going to skip a little bit because he's telling it over to everybody, and nobody is able to nobody's able to do it. Nobody's able to tell him what it means. Pasuk Tes, three lines on the bottom in the Hebrew, Vayidaber Sar Mashkim as Paro Lemor as Chata Ayani Maskir Ayom. So the Sar Mashkim, right? That's the guy from last week's Parsha who got his job back. He says to Paro, I'm going to remember, I'm going to recall my sins. Wait a second. How many sins did he have? Okay, so he's... Right, so actually, this is a debate between, I believe, Targum Unculus and Targum Yonatan as to whether Chata'ai is singular or plural. If it's singular, so then we know exactly what he's talking about, right? I mean, presumably, he's talking about whatever threw him in jail at the end of last week's Parsha. But if it's plural, so then that's a different kind of question. Is he referring to things that happened back in the day, or is he referring to additional things? You know, if you look back, look at the last few words, turn back a page for 1 second, look at the last few words look at the last pasuk in last week's Parsha. V'lo zachar sarah mashkim es Yosef v'yishkachehu. Hey, where's your gratitude, man? He forgot Yosef, he didn't remember and he forgot it. So there is such a view that's his additional sin. Can you imagine if he had said at the time, hey, Paro, there's a guy, he's a good servant, he served us well, maybe he'll serve you well. Right? Not to elevate him to some position of status, but to be a servant in the palace of the king. That wouldn't be so bad. And you're taking him out of prison, he's a good guy, and he's still going to be a slave. What's the difference? So he'll be your slave. So maybe that's what his other sin is, that he wouldn't have to schlep Yosef out of the jail now because he wouldn't have to be so distraught. Because guess what? Oh, yeah, of course. One of the guys who works at the palace of the king. He's a dream interpreter. It would have been great. So the Sar Mashkim says, Eschata'ai. So again, it's either having to do with the events that took place at that time, or it might also include the not remembering Yosef. I mean, look at the language that he uses. Eschata'ai ani mazkir. What is mazkir? Velo zachar. Sar Mashkim, right? It means remember, I'm recalling that I didn't recall. Maybe that's what it's referring to. Okay, now, my favorite thing of this, and I think I may have used this insight once in a sermon, because look what he just says. I'm going to recall my sins. And instead of recalling his sins, what does he say? I love this. Paro katsaf al avadav. Let me recall my sins. You got angry at me. What's he doing? He's blaming, right? Yeah, let me recall my sins. You! It wasn't me, it was you. Hey, Paro Katsav. How many people do that, right? I'm so upset because of what you did to me. Well, hold on a second, maybe. All right, we'll leave that what it is. So he gives a little bit of the background, and he recalls the dreams, and he says, look, there was a guy, and he interpreted our dreams. So they take Yosef out, And then we're on page 224 now. So finally, Paro has Yosef in front of him, and Paro says to him, "Look, I've heard that you can dream, you can interpret dreams." And Yosef in Pasuk Tzayin, verse 16 says, "Not me, Elohim Yaneh Shalom Paro." Okay, God is the one who's going to do it. So then Paro goes ahead and starts speaking to Yosef, and he says the following, and I will try to highlight, I'm probably not going to get all of them, but I'm going to try to highlight the differences between Paro's dream and the way that he tells it over and the way that it was described to us at the beginning. Okay, and it's fun homework if you really want to do this with around the Maj table, you could do this, okay? Okay. So he says, Bachalomi, Hinani Omeid al Sfas HaYor. Well, there's the first one. Remember where he was in the dream? On. Now it's saying, I was standing on the edge. Now, that's a little different than the way it was described before. They were described as brios, basar, which is healthy of flesh. Yefos mar'eh. So, I mean, they both, you know, kind of mean the same thing, you know, pretty to look at, okay, but it's not exactly the same in terms of the way that it's being presented. Now, you want to blame Paro because he's trying to speak to Yosef in Hebrew? No, that's ridiculous. Who wrote down this text? Moshe. Okay, so Moshe is throwing in these subtleties, but why is Moshe throwing in these subtleties? Because he forgot what he wrote on the previous page? I mean, come on. Obviously, Moshe did not forget what he wrote on the previous page, and honestly, in the Torah, it's probably a little higher up in the column. Okay, Moshe didn't forget, and he could have easily looked back. But these changes are here for a reason, because the way that Moshe was told to put it down, or honestly, this could have been given to him straight from God, the way that we understand whatever Moshe was given at Sinai, that there's a reason why there are these changes. Okay, and it's not because something was lost in translation from Egyptian to Hebrew. Okay, so that's two already. Okay, that's the same. V'hine sheva paros achiros olos achariyen dalos. What is dalos? We never saw that word. You know, it was dakos, right? Dalos. V'ra'os toar. So, I mean, I had his article translate the word dalos. Scrawny. Okay, scrawny. V'ra'os toar me'od. How is it described before? They weren't... Oh, ra'os mar'eh. So he's using, instead, again, the word in the dream is mar'eh, and here we have the word toar, in both cases, replacing the word mar'eh. Virakos basar. So before, they were called dakos, and now they're called rakos. Now, a dalet and a resh look kind of similar, so are we going to assume that this is a typo? No, we're not going to assume it's a typo, okay? It's not a typo. Rakos basar. Lo ra'isi chahena b'chol eretz Mitzrayim lo roa. Now Paro's commenting in his dream. Did that happen? He says, "I have never seen anything like this in Egypt for bad." Okay, Paro, are you telling over a dream or are you trying to interpret? Just say what you saw. Don't start. I mean, if I were a lawyer, I'd say you're don't add anything. You know, just the facts, not opinion, please. So these ones, now he's using the language which he personally used. So the word dakos doesn't appear at all. That they ate the seven first ones, habrios. How did they were described when they were eaten? Yefos hamar eva habrios. So it doesn't say that here, just that they ate the healthy ones. Vatavona el kirbena velona dakibo el kirbena umarihen rakasher batchila vaikatz. Okay, now that's, again, it's not exactly the same thing actually that did not appear at all in the dream. If you recall, it just said that they ate them, but there was no depiction of what happened to them at all. Paro is conjecturing, maybe this is what he saw, he's giving testimony, but he says that this is, you know, I mean, I've never seen anything quite like this. They didn't look any different after they had eaten these big fat cows. Okay, next, va'ikatz. So then I woke up. Va'era b'chalomi. See again, Paro doesn't say va'ishan and I fell back asleep. He just goes right into it, and I saw a dream in my dream. V'nei sheva shibalim alos b'kaneh echad mele'os v'tovos. Is that the way he described them last time? I think it is. Shmileos. Hold on a second. No, it was brios with tovos. Healthy and good, and now they are described as full and good. Okay. Vinei sheva shibalim tsnumos. Dakos shudufos kadim. So tsnumos is a new word. We didn't see that before. Shudufos kadim we saw. Dakos we saw. Tsomchos archayen growing after them. What is that? How is that in the same pasuk? He says that they swallowed them up. He doesn't say anything about them looking any different than they did before or not looking any different. He says, and I told it to my necromancers, but nobody could explain it to me. Was that in your dream, Paro? Was that not in your dream? I don't know. Did you finish? You didn't say again, and I woke up. which would have been very helpful, so I know exactly when your dream ends. So what does Paro, what does Yosef do? He says, Chalom Paro, not top of the next page, Yosef Paro, Chalom Paro, Echadu, Eis Asher Elohimo, Seigil Paro. Okay, so the first thing that he tells him is that it's all one dream. So now the question is, why does Paro change everything? Okay, and there are two ways to understand it. And honestly, when you read through commentaries and when you utilize the Midrash, the different viewpoints that you come across are meant, I think, not necessarily to tell us what is or what was, but it's to get us to think and to derive different kinds of lessons. And sometimes the lessons are a little more clear, and sometimes you really have to think a lot, because you have to ask yourself, why is the Torah telling us this whole tale? Is the Torah just trying to tell us nice stories? Because one day somebody's going to turn it into a musical? Because if that's the case, then all right, fine. But then what do we need the Torah for? So just give us a storybook and illustrate it, and you know. But is the Torah trying to teach us something else? So it's fascinating to me, the relationship between Yosef and Paro, just in general, because of what happens after this. But there are two ways to look at, and maybe even more, but there are two ways to look at Paro's changes. Okay, one of them is that he's trying to help Yosef. Okay? What do I mean? There's one other narrative in the Torah which is so repetitive in its details. Anybody know? I mean, a long repeat. Anybody know what I'm talking about?
When Eliezer went to get the...
Correct. So you want to say it a little louder?
When Eliezer went to meet Rivka.
Okay, correct. So Eliezer, Avram's servant, goes to find a wife for Yitzchak. He comes to the well, and he gives this whole spiel. Ah, okay, I'm here. God sent me a sign. A girl's going to come out. I'm going to ask her for water. And she's going to say, I'll give you, and I'm going to give to your camels. And then I'll know that she's the one who said it. And then, sure enough, here comes Rivka. And she goes, and the camels, and he offers her the thing. And he asks her what her name is. Is there a place to stay? And then she brings him to the house. And then he comes in and he tells them everything that just transpired. But he changes a number of details. And most of the commentaries look at the changes there, and he said the reason why he's making these changes is because he really needs to convince the family. Right? And some of the things which he did, you know, they were a little out of order. For example, he gave her the jewelry before he asked her name. So when he tells them the story, he says, I asked her name, she told me, ah! Then I gave her the jewelry. Why? Because they're going to look at him and say, you're a fool. Why would you give some strange girl, you have no clue? You know, and he's also trying to tell them, Avram had said to him, I want you to go to the place where I grew up, Eretz Moladeti, the house of my birth, the place of my birth. He comes in and says, Avram told me to go to his family. I've never said go to my family. He said go to where my family is from. He didn't say get a girl from my family. Okay, but he's trying to convince them because he's convinced that she's the right girl. So he tells them different things in order to be convincing. So if you look at it from that perspective, right, that sometimes changes come because you want to try to, you know, help the process move along. So then Paro must have seen, in addition to the interpretation of his dream, he must have seen that there is a guy who's going to interpret or who's going to end up working alongside him. And when he sees Yosef, he's like, that's the guy, right? It's like some people when they see their Basharet, that's my Basharet, right? You just know. So that's one view. And that explains some of the changes. Now, how does that help? We'll get into it in a second. The second view is that what Paro was trying to do was make it really difficult for Yosef. Because he's not telling him exactly what he saw. He's making all these changes. And the idea being that maybe Paro was a little skeptical. All right, you were able to help my Sarah Mashkin. But you know, my Sarah Mashkin, he's a nice guy and I gave him his job back. But there was that time, I do remember, that I had to throw him in jail. So his recommendation, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. So if you're really good, you'll be able to see through the changes. But if not, I have no problem throwing you back into prison. And that's, you know, so what does that mean? Is God making things more difficult for Yosef? I mean, when you look back at this narrative, I don't think that any of us would suggest that it's not Yosef's destiny to get into this position. I mean, clearly this has to happen. Clearly, the promise made to Abraham that your children are going to be strangers in a strange land for 400 years, however many years they're actually going to be in Egypt, and we know that the number is going to end up being 210, that had to start at some point in time when they're actually in a foreign land. So how is it going to start? Is it going to start where they're being brought down in chains as part of an exile, or they're going to come down in a golden chariot because they're going to be the invited guests of the king and of his right-hand man, who's also kind of like a king, and they'll live pretty nicely in Egypt for a while. If you actually do the math and try to figure out how long they were slaves with real hard labor, and I'm not excusing it, okay, and it's a long time, but it's nowhere near 400 years. They weren't even in Egypt. They were only in Egypt for 210. You know how long slavery is? Maximum. Maybe 110 years, 116 years. Okay, again, that's not, for some people, that's a lifetime. Okay, for many people, it's a lifetime. But in the scheme of what 400 years should have looked like, and it being a little more than a quarter of that, okay, I'm not excusing it. I'm sure it was horrific, but it's a lot less. But it's a lot less. So, and that comes about because Yosef comes into this position. So what's the point? So I'm going to share with you an insight that I heard from Rabbi David Foreman, and I'll just give him an unsolicited plug. Those of you who are not signed up for alephbeta.com, I don't remember if it's .com or .org, but he makes these animated videos in his, which are in some cases like 10 minutes, 10, 12 minutes, in which he develops an idea which is always unique and always very insightful. And one of the points that he made here when it comes to Yosef is the hints that are within the text that are not about the dream per se of Paro's dream, but they're about a message for Yosef. So just, you have your seatbelts on? Okay, you have your seatbelts on. Yosef, the first thing that he says to Paro is, seven cows is 7 years. Seven stalks is 7 years. It's all one dream. What is the experience of Yosef's family? How does Yosef come about into existence? Oh man, we're running out of time. Okay. How does Yosef come into existence? Yaakov. Yaakov works for 7 years. And then Yaakov works for 7 years. And who does he work for? How are Rachel and Leah introduced to us? Do you remember? No, they're introduced. How are they introduced to us? We know, yes, obviously, they're Laban's daughters, okay? When they're first introduced to us, Ve'enei Leah Rakos, V'Rachel Haisa Yifas Tawar V'Yifas Mareh. Whoa, that's crazy, right? Now, I'll be the first to tell you that Enei Leah Rakos is spelled Resh Kuf Vav Saf. Okay, not Kuf, like you saw here. Okay, but obviously it does sound the same. And Rachel is described as Yifas Tawar, Yifas Mareh. So that's both words that we saw, both in the dream, right, where we have Mareh, right, Yifas Mareh, and when Paro tells it over, it's Yifas Tawar. Okay, so what does that mean? So Rabbi, one of the points that Rabbi, and he develops it, and I'm not going to give the time that he develops it, but that Yosef is seeing, Yosef, this is a message for you too. All that happened, right, and why is there seven and seven? And there's an element, I'm not going to say why there's seven and seven, the seven and seven because Lavan was a cheat. Okay, that's why there's seven and seven. But the idea that there's this image of Leah and the image of Rachel, and the idea that the seven, the first seven, and the seven, seven, they're coming into conflict, that maybe Yosef is getting this message, this is Rabbi Foreman's idea, maybe they're getting this message that there's a conflict between Leah and Rachel, which needs to be resolved. And that imagery that he's hearing, Yifos Mareh, you know, Rakos, even again, it's not the same word, but it sounds the same, is his way of hearing, okay, something needs to come to a head here. And Yosef is realizing, maybe Yosef is realizing, there's a message for me here that whatever that conflict was is going to be resolved in this space, in the position that I'm going to have to inherit myself, which is why after Yosef finishes telling Paro what his dream is going to mean, what does Yosef do? Right, Yosef says to him, one second, yeah, it's the bottom of page 226, okay? Yeah, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'ata yere faro ish navon v'chacham v'shisei v'al eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef says, you're going to have to, you know, find a wise guy. Not a wise guy. A wise guy. And put him over Egypt. And you got to do this. V'yafkeid pikidim ala aretz v'chimesh es eretz Mitzrayim v'sheva shnei asava. You have to do this. And by the way, there are so many parallels between Paro's dream and just the earlier stories of Yaakov with the wives. You have to go through that. Maybe towards Purim time, if you remind me, I'll give you a class. I'll focus the class on the parallels between Megillas Esther and this story, because that's crazy. Just V'yafkeid Pikidim is an example. V'yafkeid Amelach Pikidim B'chol Medinos Machuzo. So that's from Megillas Esther. But anyway. Right? You're going to have to gather all the food, and he tells him what to do. And in the top of the next page, Paro says to him, obviously, you're the guy that's going to do this. And so, what we understand from here is that the dream, once again, for Yosef, is he's getting messages. And that's why he keeps on invoking God, because he's understanding that there's something deeper going on here. I mean, there's no question that maybe that's conjecture, but I would imagine that Yitzchak, Yaakov, they knew about the promise that God had made to Avram. I can't imagine that Avram kept that a secret from them. Like, Avram was told, your children are going to be strangers in a strange land for 400 years. So in addition to the promise that you're going to inherit this land one day, they must have been told, we're not in this land yet owning it. We have to be out of here for a little while. Where is that going to take place? We don't know. Could be that Yaakov thought it was going to take place in Lavan's town. But as we know from the Haggadah, who was worse, Lavan or Paro? That's exactly, you know, one of the, I mean, it's good, it could be a possibility of why we read this Parsha always on Shabbos Chanukah. What does Lavan try to do? What does the Haggadah say? Lavan bikesh, lakor, esakol. Lavan tried to uproot everything. What does that mean? What was Lavan's intent? What was Lavan's goal? He wanted to destroy the neshama, the soul of the Jewish people. Lavan said, your children, they're actually my children. Your wives, they're actually my daughters. They're not yours, Yaakov. And Yaakov says, this place is toxic. If the soul of my people is gone, then I'm going to disappear. So I can't stay here. And he had the opportunity to leave. And he left. In Egypt, were they trying to take over the souls of the Jewish people?
No.
And they weren't even, it wasn't even genocide. I mean, the story with the babies, Paro, you know, I mean, that's not a great story. It's a terrible story. We don't even know how long that lasted, by the way. Could have been just a few days, a few weeks, we don't know. Was it genocide? No. They're trying to maximize what they can get for their economy for free. Free slave labor. All right, and compare that to Hanukkah and Purim. It's like a weird kind of crossover. What's Purim? What was the intent of Purim? Genocide. So you didn't have that in Lavan, and you didn't have that in Egypt. It wasn't genocide. What's Hanukkah? Trying to destroy the souls of the Jewish people, but we love you. We just want you to be like us. That's Lavan. Egypt, we don't really have that. In other words, there isn't that. You don't have that kind of parallel, because the Greeks weren't trying to make the Jews into slaves. They were trying to make them into Greeks. So that's just a timely thing, but I'm going to show you one more insight as to I think why this connection is made. But Yosef has to discern from here that this is the place. This is where we're going to end up. And so if I can get myself in a position to ease the first few years so that it's less, so, you know, Geri Yezarachab Eretz Lahem means you're going to be strangers in a strange land. And then Vavadum, Vinuosam, they're going to make them into slaves. That's the promise to Avram. And they're going to make them suffer. All right, so that doesn't have to be all the 400 years. It doesn't have to be all the 210 years. It could be as little as possible. So Yosef, if I'm in a position to get myself there, then that's what I'm going to do. I mean, Yosef is Yosef at Tzadik. Why? Because he's looking out for everybody else. And that's something that I think Yosef was always doing. He didn't understand his dreams, because I'm going to rule over you. I don't want to rule over you. You're my brothers. But if I'm in a position to do something, that's something else. You know, what's the name that Paro gives Yosef? Take a look on 228, Pasuk Mem Hei. Vayikra Paro Shem Yosef Tzafnas Paneach. He gives him this name, Tzafnas Paneach. Now, what does Tzafnas Paneach mean? Okay? Look at the Art Scroll commentary. on the bottom of the left, the bottom of 229. So the second sentence, not the Rashbam. Rashi and Rashbam interpret Mifaresh Hatzifunos. He who explains what is hidden. And we all know the word Safun from the Pesach Seder, right? Safun is the Afikomen, right? The Afikomen, somebody hid the Afikomen. That's why it's called Safun. So Tzafanas Panech means reveals the hidden. Now in Paro's case, it means that he revealed what was hidden in Paro's dream. But maybe for this time of year, it's also important because what's Chanukah supposed to be? It's the Nes Nistar, the hidden miracle. And what do we do when we light the Chanukah candles? We are revealing what was once upon a time hidden. A miracle of oil was, who saw it? A couple people in the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. Okay, but sometimes if something is not such a big deal, you need to make it into a big deal, then you reveal it. And that's the idea of lighting the Chanukah candles in the window, at the door, whatever, or to maximize the number of people who are going to see it. So Tzafnas Paneach, you know, there's an illusion. There's an allusion to such an idea. Okay. So overall, in the scheme of things, what we're seeing from this the flow of the story with Yosef and Paro is that there's a lot of crossover between Paro, his dream, his perspective on Yosef. And remember what Yosef eventually tells his brothers after he reveals himself in Parshas Vayigash. He says, go home and tell my father that I have become, what does he say? Vayisimeni la'av l'paro. I've become a father figure to Paro. Okay? What does that mean? What does that mean? It means that I have really risen above everybody. Now, Paro says, only my chair is going to be greater than you. And that opens the door to a question that I don't know if I'm ever going to find the answer to. Was he like a Tutankhamun? Was he a kid? Or was he older than Paro? Was he older than Yosef, rather? Interesting question. Right? If Yosef indeed was a father figure to him, well, what's the age discrepancy? So I don't know the answer to that question. Okay? But that's just something which I'll throw out there. Okay, I wanted to conclude with one more thought after all of this, because I said I was going to do something at the beginning of the Parsha and something at the end of the Parsha. And the second one, as I said, is also going to relate back to Yosef's dreams. So, okay, is the point that I shared, was that clear? What's going on here? Okay, that we're just it's the relationship, but also Yosef trying to utilize whatever his dreams meant through the dreams that Paro had and the messages which came to him both from the Sar Mashkim and the Sar Ahofin, which I know I didn't interpret. I didn't share with you rather which parts of those dreams were for Yosef. That's a class on last week's Parsha. But in here, some of the a little bit of what was for Yosef, I shared about the seven and the seven, and Yosef emerging and being able to do what he's supposed to do to save the spirit and the of the Jewish people in their sojourn down to Egypt. Okay, and that leaves us with one last question. So if you remember, I mentioned towards the beginning that when Yosef's brothers show up, Yosef sees them, where is it? Top of page 234. Okay, top of page 234. Yosef as a chalamos asher chalam lahem. Yosef remembers the dream, and then he starts doing the things which he does to make them uncomfortable. And in fact, because he can understand everything that they say, he puts them. If you look down in pasuk Yitzayin, okay. Yosef says, you're going to have to get your brother down here. How does he know about the brother? Well, they mentioned it. He didn't really ask them, but they mentioned it. And so he puts them, where does he put them? On Pasuk Yitzayin. He puts them in a mishmar. A mishmar is some kind of holding cell for 3 days. The mishmar is the place where the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofim were. Okay? As opposed to a Beis HaSohar, which is a different kind of prison where Yosef had otherwise been, 3 days. So that's interesting that he puts them there for 3 days. Is he trying to kind of reenact his hope that he was going to get out in 3 days? But the Sar Mashkim forgot him. So he takes them out anyway, and then he sends them home and says, you can't come back here unless you bring your younger brother with me. And then what do they do? Page 236. They start getting all these confessions. Right? They say, oh, we're guilty about what we did. Look at the top of page 236. Just read it in English. They then said to one another, not to Yosef, we're guilty concerning our brother, inasmuch as we saw his heartfelt anguish when he pleaded with us and we paid no heed. That is why this anguish has come upon us. Reuben said, didn't I speak to you saying, don't sin against the boy, but you would not listen, and his blood as well? Behold, is being avenged. Now, they didn't know that Yosef understood, but this is the first thing that he's seeing, that there's a little bit of remorse, a little bit of regret. Okay, so remember, he remembered his dreams. He's now seeing what they're saying. He's hearing what they're saying, and look what he does in Pasuk Chavei 25. Joseph commanded that they fill their vessels with grain and to return their money, each one's to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. And so he did for them. Then they loaded their purchase and departed from there. So here's the question: why is he giving them the money back? Okay, they came. They want to pay. Right, it's like Avram with Ephron. I want to pay for the grave. Don't give it to me for free. I want to pay. Okay? And they have no problem paying for it. Why is he giving them the money back? Is that part of his dreams? Well, they're not going to find it. He's putting it at the bottom of the bag. They got to go home. They got to empty all the stuff. And then they got to find their money or whatever it is. I mean, they find it in the hotel but on their way back. But why is he giving the money back? So there is one view that says that Yosef did not want to take anything from his family. Right? He didn't want to take anything from his family. End of the day, you know, he's going to make them feel like he'll give them a guilt trip. But he doesn't want to take anything from his family. But there is another perspective. And I saw this in a book which I have. I don't remember who the author is. It's called Meotzarot Bereshit. When I read this insight, it blew my mind. What Yosef is trying to do more than anything is to, because they're demonstrating guilt, is to reenact in whatever way that he can, the experience that brought him down here. Okay, assuming that the brothers sold Yosef, and that's a different discussion also in last week's parsha, but assuming that the brothers sold Yosef, they sold Yosef for some money. Okay, and who did they sell down the river? Using that, that's an idiom, but who did they sell down the river? A son of Rachel. Okay, a son of Rachel. Yosef just told them, you're going to bring your brother down here. You're going to bring, well, your brother, who's Yosef's brother, right? A son of Rachel. And what is he putting in their pocket? Cling, 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 ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Saying, now we're going to see if you guys are going to do it again. And if you're going to do it again, when you have money in your pocket to do it, because that's your mission. Your mission is you're going to come back here with your brother. Will you do then what you did back then? Okay? And the point is that Yosef is not being kind. Yosef is setting up a test. Do you think that Yosef couldn't see to the next step, that when they see their money, they're going to be like, wait a second, how did the money get here? That they're going to say, oh, such a nice guy, he gave us our money back. Which one are they going to think? They're not going to think, such a nice guy, he gave us our money back. They're going to think, what on earth happened here? What is going on? This is crazy. We gave him the money, right? Didn't we? We gave him the money, right? We gave him the money? Okay, this is insane. And so Yosef is setting up the stage to really see when the time comes how they're going to behave. And we see at the end of the parsha when they do bring Yosef down, when they bring Binyamin down, that when they're facing the music, so to speak, they fall to pieces. And they say, you know, we're going to be slaves. We'll take us, sell us into slavery, and you know, it's not going to happen in the reverse. And then when that happens, and then the beginning of next week's parsha. What's the beginning of next week's parsha? Yehuda. Who's Yehuda? The guy who said, "Let's sell Yosef." He comes along and says, "No way, right? There's no sale. There's no slavery. There's no nothing. Take me, not Binyamin. Binyamin has to go back." That's when Yosef realizes that the dreams can actually be fulfilled now in the way that it has to be, because they are all, forget about whether he needs them all to bow down to him. But the point is that he now sees that he's in a position to have those dreams fulfilled in the way that they were supposed to. What the sun and the moon and the stars means, I don't know. Obviously, it couldn't be Yosef's father and mother. The stars could be his brothers. I read an article, I think, by Rabbi Amnon Bazak, in which he made the argument that the sun, the moon, and the stars are probably a number representing years, because 11 stars, I mean, it could have multiple meanings, but 11 stars plus the sun and the moon could be 11 years plus a sun and the moon year. Okay? Think about, like I said before, how long was Parshas Vayeshev? 11 years. That's the 11 stars. And the sun and the moon, in Paro, one of the whole things about Paro is that he's Paro, Ra. What's Ra? Ra is the sun god. Paro called himself the sun god. So the idea that he'll have like this whole thing. Yes, I got my 11 stars. I'm finally there. 11 years. Moon, what does the moon do? It waxes, but it also wanes. And so he has that year of moon to lead up to the year of sun when he's going to meet the sun, Paro, and be given that. So there are different possibilities as to what those things mean. But I think that in the larger scheme of this parsha, between the beginning and the end, Yosef once again sees how dreams which he had, and the dreams and the messages which he got, both from the dreams of the Zahar Mashkim and the Zaharofim, and from Paro, bring us to the biggest cliffhanger in the Torah, which is the end of Parshas Miketz. But that leads into Parshas Vayigash, when he's able to be reunited with his brothers and see the fulfillment of all these dreams. And the dreams, therefore, are, I don't know if they're considered to be a prophecy, but they are a beautiful bridge between Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, all of whom, in their own way, dreamed. And that original promise to Abraham, which came in a dream, sees the coming down to Egypt through the process also of dreams, and sets the stage that it shouldn't be, as I said before, not slavery for 400 years, but Ger, they'll be strangers in a land which is not theirs, and eventually they'll be slaves and they'll suffer, but for much less time. And it's dreams which carry that story all the way from Abraham through Yosef, and they're coming down to Egypt. Okay. Sure.
It says when they took Yosef out of the dungeon.